From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
San Jose.
Oakland. Antioch.
Half Moon Bay.
Yeah, same here, Half Moon Bay.
Coming up, we'll find out what it takes to become one of the Bay Area's best coffee makers.
I mean, a lot of people see coffee and it's like a great business opportunity. I'm an entrepreneur and I want to get in coffee because, I mean, I think that's a bad reason to be in coffee. You should be in coffee because you love it. Because somehow you failed at everything else.
Then we explore what goes into writing a song with Oakland songwriter Will Sprott.
The songs that you think might be sort of too personal to share with somebody are the ones that people really connect to.
And from the StoryCorps booth, drama.
In the movies, when the straight razor comes out, there's always that little shh, you know? And I swear I heard it. And then I heard a click of the gun. And my mom said, "I will shoot you where you stand."
That and more coming up on Cross Currents. The United States Postal Service is struggling to stay in business, and one of the ways it's trying to make money is to sell off properties. More than 600 buildings so far have been targeted for disposal, including, maybe, the main post office in downtown Berkeley. Altogether, the properties have a projected value of more than $2 billion. The sales could pay off in raising short-term capital, but the long-term consequences bother many people, including Gray Brecken. He's a visiting scholar at UC Berkeley, and he's founder and scholar for the Living New Deal Project. It looks at the public works built in an effort to help lift the country out of the Great Depression. I sat down with Brecken to discuss the significance of the post office properties.
What we've forgotten is that these buildings are unique to the United States. They are in every small town. They're often the finest buildings in many small towns, and they're palaces in our major cities. And there's a reason for that. And it's basically because these buildings represented the federal presence all across the United States. That's why so many of them have artworks in them, public artworks that were designed specifically for those spaces. This was for the first time an opportunity for Americans to see themselves reflected back to themselves, their legends, their history, their landscapes, but above all, the work that they did. So the idea is to uplift the American public by creating noble surroundings. And we've forgotten that.
So now this historic building in Berkeley, which has been the central post office in the city, is being considered for sale. What exactly is happening with the post office in Berkeley?
Okay, well, several months ago, the U.S. Postal Service announced that it was going to sell Berkeley's downtown post office, a building which is nearly 100 years old. It is, by all measures, a beautiful building modeled after a famous Renaissance building in Florence by Brunelleschi. And it's been a center of community for nearly a century. And they're now going to sell it and then move to another space, which they don't own, presumably somewhere in the downtown. This makes no sense, actually, to give up a building that you own to move into space that you don't own, unless you are the real estate company that's brokering the sale. And that company is CBRE, which is owned and operated by Richard C. Blum, Senator Dianne Feinstein's husband.
Well, it's quite well publicized that the Postal Service is in real dire economic straits. So for them to be able to make quick cash in any way might be really helpful for their sustainability. I mean, they're already canceling Saturday service Yes. for regular mail. So in this way, if they have a beautiful building, perhaps they can make a lot of money right away and shore up their finances.
The Postal Service actually has a portfolio of real estate, which was paid for by my parents and grandparents, that's estimated to be worth $105 billion.
So, including the downtown Berkeley Post Office.
Including the downtown Post Office. And it's represented by buildings and property all over the United States. Now, the artworks in our post offices are literally priceless.
Which are often permanent because they've been painted into them or created within the buildings themselves.
Yes. Most of the artworks in the post offices are murals, but there's also a lot of sculpture as well, too.
Do you know what Blum and his company plan to do with the post office if the sale goes through?
Blum will do nothing, or I should say Richard Blum's company, CBRE, will do nothing with the building themselves. They're simply the brokers. Now, they have really a privileged position because they not only broker the sales of our buildings, but they advise the Postal Service on which ones to sell. So it's not surprising that the first ones going on the market are in some of the most upscale towns and cities in the country.
Which also might be some of the most valuable.
A very valuable property in Palo Alto, La Jolla, and Burlingame and other cities. But they also apparently lease out the space back to the Postal Service, which it doesn't own. So this makes no sense, actually, except in the short term, to liquidate your properties and then lease on long term properties that you don't own in other parts.
That's Gray Brecken. He's a visiting scholar at UC Berkeley and founder and scholar of the Living New Deal Project. Tonight at 7 p.m., the USPS is holding a meeting in the old city council chambers. It's open to the general public. Before the meeting, out front of the building, demonstrators are planning a rally in which local actor Josh Kornbluth will play the part of Benjamin Franklin. He's discussing the role of the public domain in America. You can find out more about tonight's public hearing and the proposed post office sales at kalw.org. And now let's cross the bay, take a quick peek over at the new Bay Bridge opening so soon, and head into San Francisco. It's perceived, and often rightly so, to be an expensive city. So it's kind of unusual to find the city ranking as one of the cheapest in anything. But it is. Last week, the Wall Street Journal ranked major world cities by how much their Starbucks charge for grande lattes. The most expensive was in Oslo, Norway, at $9.83 a cup. Yikes. But the third cheapest on the list is San Francisco, where the same drink is sold for $3.55. The only cities where you could find them cheaper are Mexico City at $3.22 and New Delhi at $2.80. Well, now, whether or not you give your patronage to Starbucks, here in the Bay, we do really like our coffee. Seems you can hardly walk a city block without stumbling upon another coffee shop. Coffee shops such as Starbucks, or the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf, or Pete's. This past summer, Pete's Coffee, which was founded in Berkeley back in 1966, well, it was purchased by a German company for $1 billion. Now, over that half century, on its way to becoming a billion-dollar company, Pete's helped launch the Bay Area craft coffee movement, spawning places like Four Barrel, Blue Bottle, Phil's, and other independent coffee shops. Today, you can find a wealth of coffee shops in the Bay, each with its own distinctive flavor and fans. KALW's Nina Gensler-Debs and Angela Johnston went on a quest to find out what makes the beans that make the Bay Area go so rich.
I have to say that my favorite coffee is Blue Bottle.
Higher Grounds in Glen Park.
If I had all the time in the world, I would always go to Sightglass.
You can find all sorts of coffee shops in the Bay Area, ranging from hole-in-the-wall basements with ripped couches and board games.
Mission Creek Cafe.
To renovated warehouses with exposed wood beams, long steel tables, and decorated with various electronics.
Sightglass Coffee.
Our first stop is Blue Bottle Headquarters, located near Oakland's Jack London Square in a beautiful old brick building. We've come here to see the roastery and meet the man behind it.
I'm James Freeman, and I started Blue Bottle Coffee almost exactly 10 years ago.
Blue Bottle is undeniably hip and definitely swanky. Their coffee shops are minimalist altars to the exacting process of brewing.
When we opened our little kiosk in Hayes Valley, that sort of it was all the things that weren't coffee were kind of stripped away. There were no couches or bulletin boards or like space to put bottles or chai or anything like that because they didn't have room for that stuff. And it turned out to be great because it let us focus on what that one question. Oh, what does the coffee taste like?
Blue Bottle sells 14 varieties of coffee. I tried the Bella Donovan blend. It's dark and citrusy, the kind of coffee that wakes you up and gets you focused. How do you think everyone at tech startups has so much energy anyways?
I mean, a lot of people see coffee and it's like a great business opportunity. I'm an entrepreneur and I want to get in coffee because, I mean, I think that's a bad reason to be in coffee. You should be in coffee because you love it, because somehow you failed at everything else.
Freeman actually started out as a professional clarinet player, but his decision to open Blue Bottle in 2002 has turned out to be a pretty successful plan B. And now he has shops and roasteries on both coasts and sells his beans wholesale all over the country.
Seems that James's daily grind has paid off.
Hilarious. We asked him when we spoke in August 2012, are you planning on getting even bigger?
Kind of have to. What I learned, not being from the business world, you can't just like stay the same, because bills don't stay the same. Bills always go up. And if you have good people, you want to give them raises, you know, and you want to keep them around. And there's a certain point where growth equals more buying power. Where that point ends and the inevitable decline begins is a question that I don't know. I'm not sure.
2 months later, he knew. He sold it to three venture capitalists for nearly $20 million.
These investors are tech guys, like the founders of Dig and Instagram, not people you'd ordinarily associate with coffee. But if you live in San Francisco, there's one guy firmly linked with coffee, and it's Phil Jaber, owner of Phil's.
Which is where we're going now.
Sometimes I call myself FCCO, but you never heard that before. It stands for Founder Chief Coffee Operation.
The father in chief has a very different philosophy of coffee than James Freeman. Where Blue Bottle is minimal, Phil's is anything but. The shop is overflowing with stuff.
I want to build culture, community. I want to make this place like your grandma's house. You understand what I'm saying? Full of love and the karma and the atmosphere. See, when you come to my shop, it's like you're in a different country. And that's what Phil's Coffee is all about, besides quality coffee, good teamwork. Yeah, we have built cultures, like you go into your grandma's house.
And when you walk into the original Phil's, it's in the Mission on 24th Street. It does feel like grandma's house.
If your grandma was kind of a crazy hippie.
There are murals all over the walls, mismatched and torn furniture, and pictures of Jaber and his kids everywhere. And then there's the coffee bar where...
We baptize the beans. We use the holy water, and we make sure we give you a good cup of coffee that comes to your taste. And we make sure you try it before you pay for it, even.
As you can probably tell, he has no doubts about the quality of his coffee.
My coffee quality is untouchable, this coffee. We are artists here. Like Frank Sinatra was born to sing, we were born to make coffee. I just can't find the words in the Bible to tell you how good it is.
Actually, he can find a lot of words.
That's the truth. Phil's most popular blend, Tesora, is creamy. It's rich and mellow and somehow comforting. If coffee were cake, this would be chocolate fudge.
Jaber's also focused on growing. There are currently 11 Phil's locations around the Bay Area, and more coming.
I have a thousand mind coffee shop in my mind. As I open one shop, the next 3-4 months I have another shop.
He made it very clear that while he wants to grow, it will be under his direction and his alone. No Instagram here, I guess.
You know, I got offered 4 venture capital. I turned them all down because none of them have anything I'm looking for. Only one guy owns Phil's Coffee. You understand?
We understand.
Yeah, he made sure of that. But while the original location of Phil's really reflects Jaber's character, none of the other branches have quite the same effect. They feel a little more like a chain.
Maybe there's no avoiding it when you expand, but it made us want to check out a place that was utterly unique. And we found the one and only actual cafe in Oakland.
When we opened, there just wasn't much here.
That's owner Sal Bednarz.
And now there is. There are a lot of new businesses have sprung up around us because we're bringing people into the neighborhood, and you know, people are out on the streets. And you know, before we opened here 3 years ago, this corner was a hangout for prostitutes, and you know, there was graffiti and junk on the ground and not much else. And now this entire block is full of, you know, young businesses doing interesting things.
Actual Cafe is spacious, but still really cozy. It's got bike racks mounted on the wall and handwritten menus and lots of local art. Bednarz thinks that coffee shops should really reflect their community.
I think the social aspect of the community cafe is something that we've sort of lost touch with, specifically here. So, you know, we're trying to fill that niche, something that brings the community together around what we do here. And food and coffee is a way that we get there.
Bednarz wants it so badly that he even did the coffee shop unthinkable.
Laptop Free Weekends came out of
my frustration with the fact that on the weekends specifically, by, you know, 9 or 10 in the morning, the place would be totally full with people sitting on their laptops, not moving all day, killing our business, sucking all the energy out of the room. We tried it as an experiment, and it worked out really well.
That's different from Blue Bottle or Phil's. There's no laptop ban at either of those places. Another difference is that Actual Cafe doesn't produce its own coffee.
We get our coffee from McLaughlin Roasters. They're a family business. They're in Emeryville, just a couple of blocks away from the cafe. They've been in business for 30-some years. They make a great product. They're not the sexiest name in the business, but I love them. They're a family business. The owner, Mike, and his wife and his two sons and a lot of other people have been working there for a lot of years together.
And the taste?
I tried their Italian roast. It's really fruity and almost flowery.
But brewing the perfect cup isn't necessarily what Bednar's is after.
We're not serving, you know, 60-year-old French wine here. We're not serving cognac. We're serving an accessible drink. But it's more important to me that I can make you that drink and serve it with a smile and listen to what you tell me and get you happy. Get you happy with what you want. That's what's important to me.
San Francisco has been ranked by the Daily Beast as the fifth most caffeinated city in America. It's got 20 coffee shops for every 100,000 residents.
They spend an average of $30 a month to get their caffeine fix.
And according to the Huffington Post, that's a little over 2 times the national spending average.
So basically, if you love coffee, the Bay Area is a good place to be.
And maybe even better if you love to sell coffee.
Cross Currents.
We're highly caffeinated in San Francisco.
This is Angela Johnston.
And Nina Gensler-Debs.
What's your favorite coffee place around the Bay? Do you think about what or how much goes into your regular cup? Leave a message on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. Your favorite cup of Joe? Call 415-264-7106, and we may share yours on the air. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. And now we'll turn from how we start our day to how we end it, maybe with a little music. It may have the word noise in the title, but the San Francisco festival called Noise Pop is all about highlighting the best indie art, film, and music in the Bay Area. It kicks off tonight with concerts including Oakland's Will Sprott. Sprott used to be with a band called the Mumblers, and now is performing solo, but all the while he's been writing songs. When asked to describe his kind of music, he says,
I play the kind of music with words and guitar. It's pretty hard to pin down. Other than that, it's pretty weird.
I don't want to be free.
However hard to describe, fans say Sprott writes personal and poetic lyrics. He spoke with KALW's Alyssa Kapnick about his approach to songwriting for this edition of Bay Area Beats.
I dedicated myself to actually writing songs after I had moved away from California, gone to school, come back home, and I felt like I needed a job. And I did the stupid thing of thinking I could write songs and make some money off of it. This song is a very old song. It's called The Hinges Lament. It's a song about a house and a person living in a house. And the song was an attempt for me to sort of look at all these mundane things that everybody does all the time. Goes to sleep, wakes up, eats food. And it was an attempt to invest all of that minutia of the day with supernatural quality.
If this house could talk, it would wheeze and cough. Shudder and sigh and keep its mouth shut. with its club-footed beds and the living room that's dead.
Some songs you write and you like them as songs, but you don't like to play. These songs that you think might be sort of almost too personal to share with somebody are the ones that people really connect to. In my interactions with people in everyday life, I'm a shy person, you know, and I don't come out of my shell all that easy. But when I write, you know, I definitely write from a place that's a lot more exposed. I feel like my friends and anybody that takes the time to listen to what I write probably gets to know me a lot better from my songs than they would if they just interacted with me on a day-to-day level.
That's Oakland-based songwriter Will Sprott. He spoke with KALW's Alyssa Kapnick. You can see him perform live tonight at Brick and Mortar as the Noise Pop Festival kicks off in San Francisco. Doors open at 7 p.m. You can find more information at kalw.org and share your events with us at our Facebook page. It's KALW. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. Noise may be something that people want to hear, like at the Noise Pop Festival. But in other cases, noise might mean bad news. And that actually brings us to your stories. This is StoryCorps Rio. Darwin Farrar grew up in a violent part of Pasadena in the 1960s. One of his neighbors was a paperboy named Wilbert, who had an abusive mother named Bonnie. In the StoryCorps booth, Darwin tells his wife about when he was 8 years old, and his neighbor's drama came to his house and played out like a scene from an action movie, in this edition of StoryCorps Griot from our archives.
His mother was gorgeous, kind of an East Indian-looking black woman who had the most wicked drinking habit. You know, if you want to talk about the mean alcoholic, 180-degree personality change, that was her. She was just the sweetest woman when she wasn't drunk, which was actually pretty rare. But once she got drunk, she was just a terror. She was abusive to him. When his mother got drunk, he would come hide at our place a lot of times so he wouldn't get beaten, et cetera. And one time, I actually believe he was there hiding, but Bonnie got wind of it or suspected it, and she came over to the house and just started cursing and saying, "Where is that little MF-er?" and blah, 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 blah. And my mom said, "He's not here. And, you know, you need to leave. And I'm not going to have you disrespecting me and making this kind of scene in front of my kids. You need to leave." And Bonnie then cursed her out and got cursed back in turn. And Bonnie was, like I said, she was drunk. When she was drunk, she was no joke. And at some point, Bonnie whipped out the straight razor.
Wow.
And you know, in the movies, when the straight razor comes out, there's always that little chick, you know? And I swear I heard it, you know, because I heard the shriek, and then I heard a click of the gun getting cocked back.
Wow.
And my mom said, "I will shoot you where you stand."
Wow.
Bonnie sobered up, put the razor away, walked out the house. I was like, whoa. You know, when you see something like that, even as a kid, you think, where did that come from? And then you realize she was actually carrying the gun, anticipating that Bonnie might come over, that it might come to that.
Huh.
I was like, wow, okay.
Darwin Farrar's mother eventually adopted Wilbert the paperboy after Child Protective Services removed him from Bonnie's care. That story is part of StoryCorps Griot, You can interview your friends and family at the San Francisco StoryCorps booth. We'll show you how at KALW.org. It's also where you can hear all of our stories from StoryCorps. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Hannah Baba, Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Alyssa Kapnick, Christina Loring, Erica Mu, Liz Pfeffer, Mary Reese, Stephen Short, and RJ Sloan. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City CarShare, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City CarShare is online at citycarshare.org, and thank you. We're listener-supported radio. Tune in to Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll head out to Point Reyes to consider the possible shutdown of the Drake's Bay Oyster Company and the best way for humans to interact with nature.
More and more, I think people don't want to see the sort of black and white wilderness versus non-wilderness. In a way, I think we've almost evolved beyond that.
What is wilderness? We'll discuss that tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. Things are going well for Ty Siegel. You're hearing him right now. Last year, he appeared on both the David Letterman and Conan O'Brien shows, and he was the headliner at the Fillmore about a month ago. This Thursday, though, he's part of the Noise Pop lineup at the significantly smaller Knockout Room in San Francisco. Music starts about 10 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Treffney.